Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I have chosen the next six surahs of group 3 for a presentation of this particular lecture. All these surahs are Meccan surahs, and they are all divided into three groups, three pairs. Surah Nahl is the very first of these six surahs, which talks about the blessings of the Almighty, the way He has presented them to us humans in a manner that we see the miraculous creation of them before our eyes, and we benefit from them on a daily routine basis. And yet it so happens that we ignore the fact that the Creator, the benefactor of ours, is often ignored, and we do not thank Him enough and adequately. Of particular significance is the mention of the bee, which makes it a duty of for itself to go from one flower to another, from one tree to another, to suck nectar from as many places as could be possible, and then make the most delicious and the most appropriate fluid which we drink, consume for various different purposes, including to get cured from various diseases. The Quran mentions this entire effort of the bee with the clarification that it all happens because the Almighty has ordained that creature to do so for the help and for the service of humans. Likewise, the Almighty draws our attention in Surah An-Nahl to the fact that the appropriate and the most apt drink of milk that we consume as a matter of routine is not something that appears from nowhere, but in fact is the end result of a very complex process wherein the drink actually goes through the route between the blood and the excrete of the cow, and then comes to us in a manner which is extremely pure and extremely useful and beneficial for our health. Likewise, this entire existence of ours is full of such signs of the Almighty, which enable a truth-seeking individual to realize that whatever we are going through is nothing but the blessing and the graciousness of the Almighty, and therefore we ought to thank Him to the best of our abilities. Towards the end of the surah, the Almighty points out the fact that we as humans are expected by Him to be fair under all circumstances. He also wants us to go beyond the duty of fairness and justice, to be, in other words, benevolent as well. And He wants that the relatives, the poor relatives of ours, should be helped by us. He prevents us and stops us from doing what is obscene, and He stops us from doing whatever is transgression and going beyond limits in depriving others of their due rights. This particular verse, Surah, verse 90 of this surah, is as if the seed on which grew the tree of the Almighty's Sharia, the law, that was expressed and mentioned in detail later in the Madan surahs. All in all, this particular surah states with utmost clarity the fact that we humans have to be believing in the Almighty and have to acknowledge all His blessings and as a consequence bowing down before Him in gratitude and submission. It talks about the attitude of the Jews who, when they went astray and started taking the law of the Almighty as a burden on themselves, it was only then that the Almighty thrust upon them the difficult law of Sabbath, of Saturday, which they were not able to properly abide by. Otherwise, the Almighty's Sharia, His law, is always easy to operate and is always in accordance with the nature of humans who are given to follow it. This surah is followed by Surah Bani Israel, which it is said was revealed pretty close to the times when the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, was to migrate to Medina. This surah begins by the mention of the verse wherein the Almighty says that it is He who took the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, from the sacred mosque, Masjid al-Haram, to the distant mosque, Masjid al-Aqsa, around which there have been blessings that He has bestowed upon the land. And this mention is actually symbolizing the fact that whereas the custodians of the distant mosque, which is in Jerusalem, that is the Jews, they have their duration of dominance as a group of people who were selected by the Almighty is coming to an end. It is now Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, and his followers, his companions, who were from the other branch of the family of children of Ibrahim, that is the children of Ismail, they are now going to be given the same authority, the same status as was enjoyed by the children of Israel for more than 2,000 years. The first para of this surah actually talks about the history of the children of Israel in a way that it is clearly explained that God has got no blood relations with anyone, and if a nation, which even if it's chosen for a particularly important task, if it doesn't abide by its commitments to the Almighty, He allows such nations to be punished and destroyed. And this is sometimes done through people who are not otherwise believers or good humans, and yet they are allowed to unleash their power and might against the people who think about themselves as if they are the chosen people. So that the children of Israel, according to the first para of this surah, were subjected to extreme hardship on two occasions, and they were also allowed by the Almighty to prevail and dominate and get strengthened on two occasions. And the Almighty explains that all what happened was exactly in response to the attitude and the behavior of the people who belong to the children of Israel. And this message, of course, is also meant for the believers as well, who are being told as if that, like the children of Israel, they too are going to be treated by the Almighty in the same manner. If they are going to be good, they are going to receive good times. But if they are not going to be good, then they're going to receive situations and conditions which are going to be extremely hard for them to endure. We then find in this surah two long paragraphs, rukus, wherein the Almighty has mentioned those injunctions which it calls, which the book calls as the mentions of hikmah, the injunctions and the requirements of hikmah, wisdom, which according to many Muslim scholars are the Ten Commandments of the Quran. All those injunctions which good humans are expected to follow as a matter of the requirement of their nature. The mention of the list of those expectations begins by the mention of the Almighty's right to be worshipped alone, and nobody else should be considered worthy of worshipping. Followed by the mention of the rights of the parents, especially when they grow old. And then the emphasis on the rights of the relatives, those who are poor and needy, and the rights of those who are otherwise needy are also mentioned. And then the Almighty mentions about the fact that if one is not expected to kill one's children out of fear of poverty, nor one is expected to come anywhere close to fornication or adultery, which is extremely obscene and unacceptable. One is expected to take the life of all humans as sacred. One is expected to always be fair while dealing with others in matters of business or otherwise. One is expected to ensure that one does not indulge in seeking information, secret information about others. And most importantly, human beings are expected never to be arrogant, because there is no reason, no basis whatsoever for them to feel arrogant for whatever status they enjoy. All in all, this surah is actually talking about the conditions which required the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, to ultimately embark upon the journey of Hijrah. And as a prelude to it, it suggests to the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, this prayer which says, O God, adkhilni mudkhala sidqin wa akhrijni mukhraja sidqin. Let me enter the way, the entrance of somebody who does it for good purposes and in all earnestness, and allow me to move away from this city in a manner that enables me to move in a manner which is adopted by people who are truth-seeking and are worthy of God's his support and his pleasure. This surah is followed by Surah Kahf, which begins by mentioning that the Quran is a book which is free from all distortions and contradictions. It is a straight book which guides all humans towards the right path. And in particular, it has come to warn people who are ascribing partners to God Almighty, including those who are trying to suggest that God has a son. Most certainly, this surah was revealed at a time when in the debate about what is the truth in religion, the Christians of the surroundings had also joined in, and the Almighty clarified that the Christian understanding that God had a son is incorrect. And the Almighty also, towards the beginning of Surah Al-Kahf, tells the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, that there is no need for him to be unnecessarily over-worried about the performance and behavior of people of his nation if they are not taking the message which is being delivered to them seriously. Because this message is meant for all those people who are interested in understanding and following it. This worldly life of ours is a trial, and this surah tells us that God has made this life beautiful and attractive. And it so happens that there are many people who, despite knowing what the truth is, are inclined to go for the worldly pleasures of this life. And of course, if somebody does it deliberately and continues to do so over a lifetime, then he or she is worthy of being punished by the Almighty and do not deserve to acknowledge and accept the message that he has sent down for the entire mankind. Surah Kahf is particularly important because of the three stories that it has mentioned. One of the stories is the story of the people of Kahf, the young people who went to a nearby cave from their town. And they did so because they realized that there was no possibility for them to survive in the polytheistic atmosphere environment of their nation. And so in order to save their faith, they decided to migrate. And then when they migrated, and migrated without any hope for, apparent hope for any material support that they would get, what happened was that God Almighty enabled them to have times which were miraculously conducive for them to survive, and then to come back to the knowledge of humans much after the generation when they had migrated had left this world. And when at a later time, people belonging to the later generations, they came to realize that the young people who had migrated for the sake of their religion were still alive. They were all bewildered and surprised, and they all acknowledged the fact that they were people very close to God Almighty. Thus, the Almighty, through the story of the people of Cave, gave this indication to the Muslims who were suffering at the hands of the Meccans, that if they too are to decide to migrate in the name of Allah, they are not going to be abandoned by God Almighty. Likewise is the story of Musa alayhi salam very significant, when he accompanied an individual who, although has not been named, yet there are many people who ascribe him as Khizr, the angel, or some people call him a noble person. But it seems that he was an angel who was required to guide Musa alayhi salam in matters which were important for him to learn as a messenger of God before he embarked upon his prophetic mission. So the journey allows them to go through various different experiences, and the end result of all those experiences was this lesson, that in this life, although you may find that at times what is happening to humans is not ordinarily understandable and explainable, yet there is an inner depth and wisdom behind all these experiences which we humans in our own capacity cannot understand, and we have to rely on God's wisdom, His mercy, to believe that when we suffer, when we come across events which are strange, which do not make sense, it does not necessarily imply that what is happening is haphazard, is without purpose, and is without anyone doing it for an important, reasonable cause. God is wise, God is mighty, God is always concerned about His humans. Whatever step He takes, whatever event He allows to take place, it always has a purpose. And Musa alayhi salam's story with Khizr is a very effective way of understanding God Almighty's ways of running the affairs of this world. Towards the end of the surah, we find that there is this mention of a king who has been described as Zulqarnain, the one with two prominent horns. The most likely possibility is that it is a reference to the king Cyrus, who was a very virtuous, pious king, who despite the power and the vast territory over which he had his empire spread across, he was still humble and he was still thankful to the Almighty for whatever he had done. Thus, it was a message which was being communicated to the people of Mecca, that if they had some power, some strength, some abilities that the Almighty has given them, it is not really befitting that they should be ungrateful and should not be interested in the message that the Almighty has sent them. They too, like Zulqarnain, should be thankful and grateful despite what He has given them, what God has given them, because whatever He has given them is actually a trial. And if they perform well, it's only then that they would be considered as successful in this trial. Kahf, Surah Kahf is followed by Surah Maryam, which by its very name is clearly mentioning the story of Mary, Maryam alayhi salam, and her son Jesus, Isa alayhi salam. Their story is preceded by the mention of the story of Zakaria and Yahya alayhi salam, and the mention suggests that Yahya alayhi salam was also born miraculously. Although his parents were extremely old, and ordinarily one would have thought that they were unworthy of giving birth to a child, yet it was only God who enabled the old couple to be good enough to have a child because they needed one for the spiritual message of Zakariya alayhi salam to continue in the later generations. Likewise was the case with Isa alayhi salam. He was also born miraculously, and therefore the miraculous birth of Isa alayhi salam does not make him as the son of God, like the miraculous birth of Yahya alayhi salam does not make him a son of God. In both cases, it was God's kindness that enabled them to be born miraculously for important reasons which had the consideration of the message to be delivered in an effective manner. This surah follows the description of these two great events by the mention of a number of important prophets: Ibrahim, Ishaq, Yaqub, Musa alayhi salam, followed by Ismail alayhi salam, Idris alayhi salam. All of them have been mentioned to bring home one important significant fact, that they were all great people who were thankful to the Almighty, always prepared to worship Him and acknowledge His Tawheed and live a life in accordance with the requirements of the principle of Tawheed. Surah Maryam is followed by Surah Taha, which should be described as a surah of Musa alayhi salam. Musa alayhi salam had a very obvious similarity with Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him. And the story of Musa alayhi salam in Taha is mentioned so as to give Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, an understanding that like him there was another prophet who went through similar circumstances, and the end result and culmination of his mission was that he was successful in doing what he was expected to do, and the apparent opposition that thwarted the possibility of his message getting spread across were frustrated by the will of the Almighty. The last of the surahs is Surah Anbiya, which partners with Surah Taha to complete the pair. What Surah Taha does with the story of a single prophet, Musa alayhi salam, it's done by Surah Anbiya by the mention of a number of messengers whose stories are briefly mentioned to bring across the same understanding that God's messengers came with the same message and they delivered them all most dutifully, and thus ensured that God Almighty has always demanded that people believe in His unity and they believe in the hereafter and they submit to Him and be good humans. The list of the messengers that are discussed in Surah Anbiya are Ibrahim alayhi salam, whose mention is done in more detail in this surah, and then followed by Lut, Ishaq, and Yaqub alayhi salam, who have all been mentioned with this understanding that they were given to Ibrahim alayhi salam as followers as a consequence of his sincerity and his hard work towards the right cause. The surah also mentions Dawood, Sulaiman, Ayyub alayhimus salam, Ismail, Idris, Zulkifl, Yunus alayhimus salam, and finally Zakariya and Yahya alayhimus salam. And this emphasizes the same point which was emphasized in Surah Taha by the mention of one prophet. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen.